Hiroiwa Junior High turned into one of the prefecture's top-ranked basketball teams. But because of that game, and because of the kanji character of three in his last name, the third man name stuck. For this year's class games, as a joke, the girls made a pair of uniforms stitched with the numbers 7 and 3. Shuya and Shinji wore these uniforms during the games. It felt like another world. Shuya wondered again where Shinji was. Shinji would have been a big help. As if the thought suddenly occurred to him, Shogo searched his pockets and pulled out a small leather pouch. He took out a sheet of white pills wrapped in aluminum foil and plastic and gave it to Noriko. Pain relievers. You should take some. Noriko blinked. But then she took the pills. Shuya said to Shogo, "Hey."
"What?"
Shogo slowly blew smoke out his mouth and looked at Shuya. "Don't stare at me. It's not that uncommon to see a junior high kid smoking. Anyway, I'm old enough to be in high school. And you're the one who brought your own supply of whiskey." So high school students were allowed to smoke? Well, that wasn't his point anyway. Shuya shook his head. "That's not what I meant. Did you find those pills at the store too?" Shogo shrugged. "Well, yeah. It wasn't exactly merchandise. I took it out of the first aid kit behind the cash register. It's not a big deal. Just some aspirin called Gomez. What an obnoxious name for aspirin, huh? Anyway, it'll stop the pain." Shuya pursed his lips. Well, he might be telling the truth, but I don't get how you can be so well prepared. And where'd you learn to stitch up a wound? Shogo's mouth broke into a wide grin. He shrugged and replied, "My dad was a doctor." "What?" "He ran a small dump, a clinic in the slums of Kobe. I've seen him sew people up ever since I was a kid. In fact, I was a pretty good nurse. I even did some work myself. My dad couldn't afford to hire a nurse." Shuya was speechless. Was he telling the truth? Shogo held up the cigarette between his fingers, as if to cut off Shuya's response. "It's true. Just think about it, and you'll see how important medicine is in these circumstances." Shuya kept quiet for a moment, but then recalled something else that puzzled him. "Oh, yeah."
"What?"
"You mind if I ask?" "Skip the formalities, Shuya. We're in this together." Shuya shrugged once and then rephrased what he had to say. "Back on the bus, you were trying to open the window. You must have realized there was sleeping gas." Hearing this, Noriko gave Shogo a puzzled look. This time Shogo shrugged. "So you saw me? You should have lent me a hand."
"I couldn't.
How did you know what was going on, though? I mean, there was no smell or anything." "Oh yeah, there was," Shogo replied and rubbed his half-finished cigarette into the ground. "It was faint, but if you've smelled it once, you'd recognize it."
"How did you recognize it?"
This time Noriko asked.
"My uncle actually worked at a state chemical lab and..."
"Come on!" Shuya interrupted him. Shogo grimaced and said, "If I have to, I'll explain it later. As far as I'm concerned, I blew it big time. I should have noticed sooner. And I certainly didn't expect this to happen. But we should be focused on the present. Do you have any plans?" "If I have to, I'll explain later." That statement bothered Shuya, but Shogo was right. Their priority was to come up with a plan for their escape. He put his questions on hold and said, "We're planning on escaping." Shogo lit another cigarette and nodded. Then, as if suddenly remembering what he had to do, he tossed dirt onto the charcoal inside the rock pit. Shuya heard the sound of Noriko swallowing a pill with water. Shuya continued, "How hard do you think it'll be?" Shogo shook his head. "The question is whether it's possible at all. My answer would be extremely remote."
"So what then?"
"Well, even if we escaped..." Shuya lifted his hand up to his neck, to the object that was wrapped around Shogo's and Noriko's necks as well. "We'd be immediately discovered because of these collars."
"Yep."
"And we can't get near that school. Sakamochi had said, 20 minutes after your departure, this school will become a forbidden zone."
bastard.
True. But maybe there's a way to lure him out here. Then we take Sakamochi hostage. That's how we get them to disable the collars.
Shogo raised his brow.
And?
Shuya licked his lips.
Before doing that, we locate a ship and escape by taking Sakamochi with us. Even as he was saying it, Shuya knew his plan was hopeless. He hadn't even figured out how they were going to lure Sakamochi out of the school.
No, you couldn't even call it a plan, just an idea.
That's it? Shogo asked.
Shuya could only nod.
Shogo once again puffed on his cigarette. Then he said,
First of all, there aren't any ships.
Shuya bit his lip.
You never know.
Shogo briefly smiled and blew out more smoke. I told you how I went to that supply store by the harbor. There weren't any boats. Not one. Not even damaged ones left on the shore. Every single boat's been taken away. I mean, they were absurdly thorough.
Then the guardship will do. As long as we can hold Sakamochi hostage.
That's impossible, Shuya, Shogo said. You saw how many Special Defense Forces soldiers they had. Besides, Shogo pointed to the silver collar around his neck. They should be able to send the command to detonate these at any time, regardless of what zone we're in. Anytime, anywhere. The odds are stacked against us. Even if we manage to capture Sakamochi, I'm sure as far as the government's concerned, he's expendable.
Shuya fell silent again.
Do you have any other ideas? Shogo asked him.
Shuya shook his head.
No.
What about you, Noriko?
Noriko also shook her head.
But she had something else to say.
That's why I suggested we gather as many people as we can. Even if they're only the ones we trust. To come up with a plan together. I thought if we met together as a group, we might come up with a good idea.
That's right, Shuya thought. That's what I forgot to say.
Shogo only raised his scarred left brow.
And who are the ones you trust?
Shuya replied enthusiastically. There's Shinji Mamura. Then there's Hiroki Sugimura. Let's see, as far as the girls go, there's our class representative, Yuki Utsumi.
Shinji is really amazing. He knows a lot. He knows so many different things. He's good with machines, too. He'd come up with something.
Shogo rubbed his stubbly chin with his left hand as he stared at Shuya.
Then he said,
Shinji,
huh?
Shuya looked surprised. What's wrong?
Well, Shogo seemed hesitant.
I saw Shinji.
What?
Where?
Shuya raised his voice.
He exchanged looks with Noriko.
Where? Where did you see him?
Shogo pointed his chin to the east. It was at night, west of the school. He seemed to be searching for something inside a house. He had a gun, and I think he noticed me.
Why didn't you call out to him?
Shuya raised his voice scornfully. Shogo gave Shuya a puzzled look.
What do you mean?
Well, come on. He helped Noriko get back to her seat in the classroom. You saw that. Besides,
Shogo predicted the rest.
He tried to have the game postponed for Noriko's injury, right? So that there'd be a chance for everyone to escape?
Shuya nodded.
Shogo shook his head. You expect me to trust him on account of those acts?
No way.
Besides, he might have been trying to con everyone into believing he was a trustworthy guy. It'd suit him fine if he planned on getting rid of everyone later.
That's ridiculous.
Shuya raised his voice.
How cynical can you get? He's not that kind of guy. He's...
Shogo silently extended both of his palms forward and Shuya fell silent.
He was right. Raising your voice was not a good idea. In fact, it was a very bad idea.
Then Shogo said, Cut me some slack. I don't know Shinji. Like I said before, the rule is to suspect, not trust, everyone in this game. And you have to be all the more suspicious of someone who's smart. Besides, even if I invited him to join me, he probably would have refused.
Shuyu was about to say something, but then exhaled and decided against it. Shogo had a point. In fact, it was odd how Shogo could trust him and Noriko at all. Shogo did say, though, that it was because they made a nice couple. Well then, Shuyu paused before continuing. We should at least go where you saw Shinji. We can definitely trust him. I guarantee it. He'd come up with a good idea. He's... But once again, he was interrupted. Shogo shook his head and said, If Shinji is so smart, then do you think he'd stay where I saw him? He was right. Shuyu sighed. It was a very long, deep sigh. Hey, Noriko spoke up. Shogo, I was wondering if there was any way we can contact others like Shinji. Shogo shook loose another cigarette and shook his head. I doubt it. If we were trying to reach a general, unspecified number of people, well, maybe. But contacting a particular party or person would be difficult. They fell silent for a while. Shuyu stared at Shogo, who had his cigarette stuck between his lips. The tip of the Wild Seven crackled and grew shorter. Then, Shuyu said, nearly speechless, There's nothing we can do. Shogo responded flatly. Oh, but there is. What? I have a plan. Shuyu stared again at Shogo's face, wrapped in a cloud of smoke. Then he suddenly became excited and asked, What do you mean? Is there a way out? Shogo looked over at Shuyu and Noriko. Then he looked up at the sky in contemplation, his cigarette still dangling from his lips. His right hand touched the smooth surface of the collar around his neck, as if it annoyed him. The smoke slowly drifted by. Shogo said, There might be a way, with one condition, though. What's that? Shogo shook his head slightly and then brought his cigarette closer to his lips. We have to be the only survivors. Shuyu knit his brows. He didn't understand. What do you mean? It should be obvious. Shogo looked back at them. Meaning the three of us have to be the only ones alive. The others would have to be dead. But, Noriko immediately raised her voice. That's too much. So we're just looking after ourselves? Shogo held his cigarette between his fingers over his crossed legs and raised his brow. Shuyu's escape plan would amount to the same thing, though. No, Shuyu intervened. That's not what Noriko's saying. She's asking you whether our survival comes at the cost of everyone else. Right, Noriko? That would just be... horrible. Hold on, guy, Shogo waved his hand. He crushed his cigarette against the ground. I'm not against our group expanding, as long as we can trust them. But whether we find others or not, everyone besides the ones in our group will have to die. If that's the case, Shuyu said enthusiastically, we could inform everyone. If you have the most reliable plan, then no one will oppose it. Then everyone would be saved, right? Shogo pursed his lips in response to Shuyu. Then he asked in a slightly irritated tone, What if we're attacked before we even manage to get a word in edgewise? Shuyu took a deep breath. Unless you're actively out to kill people, then, relatively speaking that is, the smartest way to survive would be to stay put and hide. That's the reason why, Shogo pointed to his collar, the government is using this to force us to move. That's one of the basic tenets of this game. Don't forget that. You move around aimlessly, and you're a walking target for someone lurking in the shadows. With Noriko injured like this, we're prime targets. He was right. Besides, when you insist everyone has to be saved, that only means we might not get killed here. But what if we end up as fugitives, Shogo said. We'll be chased by the government, and the probability that we'll get killed in the end is extremely high. I doubt anyone would submit to a plan like that. Don't forget. You don't know who your enemies are in this game. Blindly accepting everyone could ruin everything for you. But no one's that bad. Can you really say that, Shuyu? Shogo's eyes grew stern. It'd be wonderful if everyone in this class were good. But if we're going to be realistic, we have to be careful. Think about it. You yourself were attacked by both Yoshio Akamatsu and Tatsumichi Oki. Shuya had told Shogo about Yoshio's assault when Shogo was stitching Noriko's leg. Shogo was absolutely right. He had no idea what Yoshio Akamatsu had been thinking. Shuya sighed. His shoulders drooped down as he feebly mumbled, "Then, they're going to let most of our classmates, the good ones, just die." "That's what this means, right?" Shogo moved his chin up and down slightly, nodding. "It's not easy. But yes, I don't know if it's going to be most of the class, though." They fell silent for a while. Shogo lit another cigarette. He smoked too much, and he was a minor. Then Noriko said, "Hey, wait." Shuya looked at her. "You said we might escape if everyone else dies, but we could also run out of time if no one dies for 24 hours. "Yeah," Shogo nodded. "That's correct." "In that case, I guess your plan wouldn't work." "That's right. But I highly doubt that'll happen. Besides, if everyone can really get along and agree to my plan, then they're totally welcome. But I doubt that'll happen. So there's really no need to worry about it. Apparently, only 0.5% of the national programs have ended due to time expiration." Shuya blurted out, "Apparently? How would you know?" "Hold on." Shogo again made a pushing gesture with his hands to stop Shuya. "We have more urgent matters at hand. You haven't asked me what my plan is." Shuya fell silent. Then he asked, "What is it?" Shogo shrugged. Through the corner of his mouth, which was still holding the cigarette, he curtly replied, "I can't tell you." Shuya knit his brows. "What?" "Not yet." "Why?" "I just can't." "What do you mean, not yet? Then when do you plan on telling us?" "I suppose when it's just the three of us left. Let me tell you just one thing, though. My plan won't work if anyone tries to intervene, so my plan can't start until we're the only ones left." Shuya fell silent again. He stared at Shogo, who continued smoking, but then Shuya heard a voice whispering something inside his head. It was faint, but he could hear it. As if he could hear this voice, Shogo grinned. "I know what you're thinking, Shuya. There might be something else going on here. I might be joining you just as a means for my own survival. In fact, I might not have a plan at all. Once we're down to three, I might kill you two and win the game. That would work out nicely for me, right?" Shuya was slightly intimidated. "That's not... no?" Shuya held his tongue and glanced over at Noriko. Noriko remained silent, staring at Shogo. Shuya looked back at Shogo. "That's not it. It's just that..." Shuya stopped all of a sudden. It was someone's voice. It was very distant, but he could tell it was electronically distorted. A voice calling, "Hey, everyone!" 29 students remaining.
Chapter 22. The voice continued, "Listen up, everyone." It was a girl's voice. Noriko said, "It's Yumiko." She was referring to Yumiko Kusaka, female student number 7, a tall, energetic girl who batted fourth on the girls' softball team. "I'm going to go check this out." Shogo's face stiffened. He took his shotgun and stood up. He began walking east into the thicket toward the voice. "We'll go with you." They weren't done talking, but Shuya tucked his Smith & Wesson in front and offered his shoulder to help Noriko up. Shogo glanced back at them, but said nothing and began walking. Once they reached the end of the thicket, Shogo stood still. Shuya and Noriko, too, stopped walking. Shogo exclaimed, "Why there?" Shuya walked up right behind Shogo, and like Shogo, he and Noriko poked their heads out of the thicket. It was a mountain peak. There was a viewing platform between the trees scattered on the peak. It was probably 500 or 600 meters away from the foot of the mountain, where they were. But they could still see it clearly, The platform was a crude construction, resembling a shack with a missing wall. There were two figures standing under its roof. Shuya's eyes widened. The voice reached them. "Everyone, stop fighting and come here." Shuya saw an object held in front of the taller figure's face. It was probably Yumiko's. Was it a megaphone? The type cops used to address criminals cooped up inside buildings under siege? It felt slightly absurd. "Put down your weapons and come out with your hands up." But he could see how her voice could reach not only them, but the rest of the island. "And the other one?" Shuya whispered. "It's Yukiko. Yukiko Kitano," Noriko replied. "They're really close." "This is really bad," Shogo said with a grimace. "They'll get themselves killed totally exposed like that." Shuya bit his lower lip. Basically, Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano were attempting to convince everyone they should stop fighting. They were doing what Shuya had considered, but gave up on after he was attacked by Yoshio Akamatsu. They firmly believed no one really wanted to play the game. They chose that spot to be as visible as possible. Or maybe they were already near that location. "I'm sure no one wants to fight like this, so let's get together here." Shuya hesitated. He needed more time to process the situation. Plus, the conversation they were having hadn't been resolved. What if... it was unlikely, but what if Shogo was against them? In the end, Shuya spoke to Shogo. "Can you look after Noriko, Shogo?" Shogo turned around. "What are you going to do?" "I'm going over there." Shogo knit his brows and said, "What are you, stupid?" His put-down angered Shuya, but he simply answered, "What do you mean? They're risking their lives doing this. They have no intention of playing the game. They really don't. So they can join us. Besides, you just said they were endangering themselves." "That's not what I meant." Shogo bared his teeth. It was an odd thing to notice, but they looked remarkably healthy. "I just told you. It's best to stay put in this game. How far do you think that spot is from here?" "You have no idea who you'll encounter on the way." "I know that," Shuya shot back. "No, you don't get it. Everyone knows about those two now. If anyone attacks them, then the enemy's going to wait for others offering themselves up like you, with more targets." What gave Shuya the creeps wasn't so much Shogo's warning, but his calm tone of voice. "Please, everyone, come here. We're alone here. We're not fighting." Shuya slid his shoulder loose from Noriko's right arm. "I'm going." He gripped the Smith & Wesson and walked out of the bushes, but Shogo tugged on Shuya's left arm. "Stop. Why?" Shuya's voice grew louder. "You want me to just sit back and watch them get killed?" He raised his voice uncontrollably and blurted out, "Or is my leaving going to decrease your chances of survival? Is that it? Is that what's going on? Are you our enemy?" "Shuya, stop it," Noriko moaned. But Shuya wasn't finished. Then he saw how calm Shogo looked even as he still held on to his arm. Although they hardly resembled each other, Shogo's composure reminded Shuya of the former superintendent of the charity house, Miss Ono's elderly father. After his parents died when he was still a kid, this man, who was the only authority figure and guardian he knew, sat down with him. He also wore the same kind of expression. Shogo said, "It's none of my business if you want to die. But if you go now and don't return, then you'll drastically decrease Noriko's chances of survival. Have you forgotten that?" Shuya took a deep breath. Once again, Shogo was right. "But..." Shogo calmly continued, "I'm sure you must know this, Shuya, but loving someone always requires you to not love others. If you care about Noriko, don't go." "But..." Shuya felt like crying. "So what are you suggesting? We just let them get killed?" "I didn't say that." Shogo released Shuya and turned toward the peak where Yumiko continued her shouting. He held his shotgun. "We'll be decreasing our chances of survival slightly. Only slightly." Shogo pointed the shotgun into the air and pulled the trigger. The gunpowder blast was ear-shattering. Shuya thought his eardrums had been blown out for a moment. The sound reverberated against the side of the mountain. Shogo's left hand pumped the shotgun, ejecting the spent cartridge. He followed with another shot.
The sound rippled through the air. I get it, Shuya thought. The gunfire will scare off Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano, forcing them to stop and go hide instead.
Yumiko's voice, amplified by the megaphone, stopped. It felt as if Yumiko and Yukiko were looking down on where they were.
But we're hidden by the bushes, so they probably can't tell who we are. Come on, shoot some more!
Shuya was riled up, but Shogo refused. No. Someone might have already figured out our location with those two shots. Any more could be fatal for us.
Shuya considered it.
Then he tried to point his Smith & Wesson into the air. Shogo once again tugged at his arm.
Stop it. How many times do I have to tell you? But...
We can only hope they've hidden themselves now.
Shuya looked over at the peak.
Then he heard it again.
Once again, Yumiko Kusaka's voice shouted, Stop! I know none of us wants to fight.
Shuya shook off Shogo's grip. He couldn't take it anymore.
You wanted them to hide somewhere safe, no matter what.
He had his fingers on the trigger of the Smith & Wesson when... All of a sudden they heard a distant, rattling sound like that of a rapid typewriter tapping.
Then Yumiko's shriek,
reached them. Of course, her cry was also amplified by the megaphone. After a moment's pause, a scream that sounded like it came from Yukiko Kitano. This, too, reached them courtesy of the cheap megaphone. Under the platform roof on the mountain peak, a tall figure appeared to collapse, and Yukiko screamed, Yumiko! Followed by a loud thud, the sound of the megaphone hitting the ground.
Shuya heard a single shot.
Shuya realized the megaphone had also been picking up this sound as well. Once the megaphone was broken, the sound was drastically reduced. And now the figure of Yukiko also collapsed into the shadows of the short trees, disappearing along with Yumiko from their sight. Shuya's and Noriko's faces turned white. 29 students remaining.
Chapter 23. Yukiko Kitano was crawling on the concrete floor of the viewing platform toward Yumiko Kusaka. Her stomach was burning, and she felt paralyzed, but somehow she managed to crawl to her. Yukiko left a trail of violent red brushstrokes on the concrete canvas of the platform floor.
Yumiko!
Yukiko let out a shriek that tore through her stomach, but she didn't care. Her best friend had fallen and lay motionless. That was what mattered to her now. Yumiko had fallen forward, facing Yukiko, but her eyes were closed. A gooey red pond began to form under her body. Once Yukiko reached Yumiko, she struggled to lift her. Then she shook her by the shoulders.
Yumiko! Yumiko!
As she shouted, a red mist sprayed into Yumiko's face, but Yukiko didn't even realize it was coming from her mouth. Yumiko slowly opened her eyes and gasped.
Yukiko! Yumiko, wake up!
Yumiko grimaced. Then she finally managed to utter, I'm so sorry, Yukiko. I was stupid.
Hurry, escape.
No, Yukiko cried and shook her head. We have to go together.
Come on.
Yukiko frantically looked around. There was no trace of the assailant. They were probably shot at from a distance.
Hurry.
She tried to raise Yumiko's body, but it was impossible. She immediately realized she could barely support her own body. The pain was much worse now, attacking her stomach as she shrieked and fell forward again. She still managed to face Yumiko. Yumiko's face was right in front of her eyes. Her glazed eyes stared at Yukiko. She asked in a feeble voice,
You can't move, Yukiko?
Nope. Yukiko did her best to form a smile. I guess not. I'm so sorry, Yumiko quietly said again.
That's all right. We did what we had to, right, Yumiko?
She could tell Yumiko was about to cry. Although Yukiko thought she wasn't seriously injured, she was beginning to fade. Her eyelids grew heavy.
Yukiko?
Yukiko was brought back by Yumiko's voice.
What?
There's something I didn't tell you when we were talking.
Huh?
Yumiko smiled a little. I also had a crush on Shuya.
For a moment, Yukiko didn't understand what Yumiko was talking about. She couldn't tell whether this was because it was so unexpected or because she was fading. Finally, though, Yumiko's words knocked at the door of Yukiko's heart and entered. So that was how it was. Then, as her mind sank into the mist, Yukiko remembered a scene. She and Yumiko had gone shopping together. It was a cheap 3,000 yen bargain sale item, but they'd found a pair of beautiful earrings, and although they hardly ever shared the same tastes, they ended up fussing over who really deserved these earrings. Finally, they agreed to split the cost so that both of them would end up with one earring each. That was the first time they actually bought jewelry. And now, as always, that earring was tucked away in the drawer of her desk at home, located near the border between Shiroiwa and the neighboring town. For some reason, Yukiko felt incredibly content. It was strange, given how she was dying. "Really," Yukiko said. "Really." Yumiko again smiled faintly. Yukiko opened her mouth just once more. She could say one last thing. It was true. She wasn't sure about religion, but if the Halo Church had ever offered her something beautiful, it was Yumiko. "We met at the church, and we've been together ever since." "Yumi, I'm so happy that we've been..." As Yukiko was about to say "friends," Yumiko's head jerked violently. A red hole formed in her right temple, and now Yumiko merely gawked at her. The faraway look she had might have been unintentionally appropriate, given their location, the viewing platform. Yukiko opened her mouth in shock and horror when she heard another pop, this time accompanied by a blow to her head. It was the last sensation she ever felt. Kazuo Kurayama, male student number 6, remained crouched so no one beyond the platform could see him. He lowered the Walther PPK that had belonged to Mitsuo Numai and picked up the girl's daypacks. 27 students remaining. Chapter 24. After the two shots were fired, Shuya and Noriko remained frozen. Above them, a hawk cried. After checking the premises, Shogo turned back and said to them, "It's over. Let's go back." As Shuya held up Noriko by her arm, he looked at Shogo standing above them. His lips trembled uncontrollably. "What do you mean, it's over? You could be a little more considerate." Shogo shrugged his shoulders. "Look, this is the way I talk. I'm not good at expressing myself. In any case, now you see, right? Some of our classmates are really up to the task. And let me just add that this wasn't something Sakamochi and his crew cooked up. They don't want to die either, so they're cooped up in that school." Shuya still wanted to say something back, but he managed to restrain himself and began walking, holding Noriko's arm. As they walked, Noriko said in a hoarse voice, "It's so terrible. How awful can it get?" Once they reached their location, Shogo said, "We have to get ready, just in case. We're going to move about 100 meters. I thought you said it was best to stay put." Shogo puckered his lips and shook his head. "You saw what happened. Whoever it was, that bastard is merciless. On top of that, he has a machine gun and a pistol too, it sounds like. He probably figured out where we are. If he does, then we're better off moving away from here." He added, "Just a little. We'll move over just a little." 27 students remaining. Chapter 25. Yutaka Sito, male student number 12, was crawling frantically down the slope on his hands and knees. The black S-sized school coat covering his small body had turned nearly white from dirt. His large eyes had a childish innocence to them, but right now the class clown's face was contorted with fear. After he'd left the school building, and up until a few moments ago, Yutaka Sito had been hiding out in the bushes near the northern peak, approximately 50 meters below the viewing platform where Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Katana were calling to everyone with their megaphone. Although he was at an angle from them, Yutaka could see them clearly. He'd hesitated, deliberating over what he should do. And right when he finally decided to join them, he heard the roar of a shotgun. He thought he could see the two girls look in the opposite direction from him. Then, as he hesitated over whether he should go check it out, he heard the sound of machine gun fire and Yumiko Kusako's amplified shriek. He saw her fall. Then Yukiko Kitano was also shot down. They were probably still alive at that point, but Yutaka just could not bring himself to come out and rescue them. After all, he was a born jokester. Fighting was just not his thing. And on top of that, his supplied weapon turned out to be a fork, the normal kind you would use to eat spaghetti. Then he heard a gun being fired twice more, somewhere beyond his sight. He knew then that the assailant had finished off Yumiko and Yukiko. The moment he realized this, he took his bags and slid down the side of the mountain. "I'm the next target. I know it. After all, I'm the nearest one." All of a sudden, Yutaka realized he had created a cloud of dust all around him. "Oh no, no, this sucks. This blows more than your mama." "Hey, now is not the time to come up with stupid jokes." Yutaka then changed his approach, keeping his palms, his right hand held the fork so it was clenched, and shoe soles on the ground to make sure his body wouldn't slide down the slope. He felt the skin of his hand scraping away, but he didn't care. "Damn, if someone saw me now, they'd think it was funny. Ladies and gentlemen, the human beetle." After moving forward like this for several minutes, Yutaka finally stopped. Slowly he turned around. Through the trees he could make out the summit where Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano had been killed. But it seemed far. Everything was still. He strained his ears. There was no sound. Did I escape? Am I safe now? As if answering his own question, something dug into his shoulder. Yutaka froze up with fear and shrieked, "Ai!" "You fool," someone hissed as the grip on his shoulder relaxed, and instead a clammy hand covered Yutaka's mouth. But Yutaka was completely oblivious to the voice, utterly convinced he was caught by the killer, and swung the fork in his hand in a fit of fear. The fork made a clacking sound and stopped there. For some reason, nothing happened. Yutaka nervously opened his eyes. The figure in front of him was wearing a school coat. He'd blocked the fork with his large automatic pistol, Beretta M9-2SB-F. He held the gun in his left hand. Given the respective positions, and the fact that he had his right hand over Yutaka's mouth, Yutaka's fork would have stabbed the guy pretty deep had he been right-handed. But this guy was left-handed, and there was only one left-handed guy in Class B. That was dangerous, Yutaka. The front of his wet-looking hair was styled with gel. His eyebrows rose at a sharp angle, and beneath them were his piercing but humorous eyes. Finally, there was the earring in his left ear. It was Yutaka's best friend, the third man, Shinji Momura, male student number 19, grinning at him and gently removing his hand from his mouth. Stupefied, Yutaka lowered his fork. Then he finally yelled out, "Shinji! It's you, Shinji!" "You idiot!" Shinji Momura hissed at Yutaka and once again shut Yutaka's mouth. Then he let go and said, "This way. Don't say a word. Just follow me." And walked ahead of him into the low bushes. As Yutaka followed him, dazed, he gradually saw how he had descended from the top of the mountain to the more level area below. Within a matter of minutes, he'd covered a good distance. Yutaka then glanced at Shinji Momura's back. But then he was suddenly overwhelmed by a horrible idea and felt weak in the knees. Maybe Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano were killed by Shinji. Then the killer chasing Yutaka would be Shinji. But then why hasn't he killed me yet? I mean, come on. I always thought of him as my best friend, and Shinji knows that. If we're together, Shinji could, for instance, have me keep watch and help him increase his chances of survival. Then, when we're the last two left, Shinji could kill me. Wow. What a great idea. If this were a video game, that's what I'd do. You jerk! What are you thinking? Yutaka shook off the thought. Shinji didn't have a machine gun, and nothing else could have made that sound. He was certain he didn't have one. And besides, most of all, it was Shinji. He was his best friend. He would never have killed those girls off as if they were flies.
"What's wrong, Yutaka?"
Shinji turned around and whispered.
"Hurry up."
Yutaka, still dazed, continued to follow Shinji. Shinji walked carefully. Once they had covered a distance of approximately 50 meters, he stopped. With his gun in his right hand, he pointed down toward his feet.
"You have to step over this here," he warned Yutaka.
Yutaka narrowed his eyes and noticed a thin, dull piece of thread stretched tightly between the trees.
"Is this?"
"It's not a trap," Shinji said after stepping over the thread. "There's an empty can tied to it over there. Once it's tugged, we can hear it fall."
Yutaka nodded, eyes opened wide.
Shinji had been hiding out, and this was a kind of tripwire alarm. Impressive. The third man was more than just a star athlete.
Yutaka stepped over the thread.
They reached a thicket 20 meters away. Shinji stopped walking. He said to Yutaka,
"Let's sit down."
Yutaka sat down, facing Shinji. He realized he was still holding his fork. He put it on the ground when all of a sudden he felt a stinging pain from his left palm and right fist. The skin had peeled off, leaving torn red flesh on his knuckles. Seeing this, Shinji put down his gun and pulled out what appeared to be a day pack from a nearby bush. He took out his water bottle and towel, doused one end with water, and said, "Give me your hands, Yutaka." Yutaka held them out, and Shinji wiped the palms thoroughly, but gently. Then he tore the dry part of the towel into thin shreds and wrapped them around Yutaka's hands. Yutaka said, "Thank you." Then he asked, "So you've been hiding here?"
"Yeah," Shinji smiled and nodded.
"I caught a glimpse of you from here moving around in the bushes. You were pretty far away, but I could tell it was you. So even though it was a little risky, I went in your direction."
Yutaka choked up.
"Shinji risked his life for my sake."
"It's dangerous if you don't move carefully."
"Uh-huh."
Yutaka was about to cry.
"I'm glad," Shinji exhaled. "Even if I die, I wanted to make sure I got to see you." Now Yutaka's eyes were watering. He held his tears back, though, and changed the subject.
"I was right near Yumiko and Yukiko. I wasn't able to help them."
"Yeah," Shinji nodded.
"I saw that, too. That's how I found you.
Don't let it get you down. I wasn't able to do anything for them either."
Yutaka nodded.
Recalling how Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Katano were killed only moments ago, he trembled.
27 students remaining.
Chapter 26. Shuya, Noriko, and Shogo ended up moving approximately 100 meters southwest of their previous position. By the time Shogo was done tying the wire around the bushes again, it was already 9 a.m. The sun was high in the sky, and the air smelled like a forest in May. The sea, which was visible as they moved through the trees, glistened a brilliant blue. Islands were scattered across the Seto Inland Sea. If they were only hiking, this would have been a prime spot. But they weren't. Every single boat that passed by circled around the island at a great distance, tiny as dots, and the nearest one was the gray guardship in charge of the western region. Even that ship was pretty far out, but Shuya could see the machine gun installed at its head. After Shogo was done setting the wire, he took a deep breath and sat down in front of Shuya and Noriko. Once again, he placed his shotgun between his feet.
"What's wrong?"
"You're both so quiet now," Shogo asked. Shuya looked up at Shogo. He hesitated and then asked, "What made them do that?" Shogo lifted his brows.
"You mean Yumiko and Yukiko?"
Shuya nodded. After hesitating, he said,
"I mean, it should have been obvious. They could have anticipated that. I mean, according to the rules of this game," he sighed,
"we're supposed to kill each other." Shogo put another cigarette between his lips and lit it with his disposable lighter. They seemed close.
Weren't they in some religious group?
Shuya nodded.
They were very normal girls, but there was always something that separated them from the other girls, like Noriko and the neutral faction that included Yuki Utsumi and her friends. He thought it was because of their religion. They were part of some Shinto religious group called the Halo Church. They have a church located on the Yodo River bank, off the state highway when you're heading south.
Shogo exhaled and suggested, maybe that was part of it. You know, love thy neighbor.
No, I don't think so, Noriko said. They weren't, especially Yumiko, very committed. They said they didn't really get it, that it was just a social thing.
Shogo mumbled, I see,
and looked down. Then he continued,
well, the good aren't always saved, and this game is no exception. It can be the irresponsible ones who end up making it. But I respect anyone who stands by their conscience, even at the risk of failing and being rejected by everyone.
He stared back at them. They tried to believe in their classmates. They must have believed that if we could all get together, then we might end up being saved. We should commend them for that. We couldn't do that.
Shuya took a deep breath. Then he agreed.
Yeah. After a while, Shuya looked up at Shogo again. I don't think you're an enemy, so I want to trust you.
Noriko joined in. Me too. I don't think you're a bad person.
Shogo shook his head and grinned. I have to tell you, I have no talent cheating girls.
Shuya grinned back. Then he said, so why won't you tell us?
No, if you can't tell us how we're escaping, that's fine. But why not?
Is it in case we meet up with other people and tell them too much? Is it because the others can't be trusted? Or that you can't trust them?
Hold off on the interrogation. I'm not that smart. I don't believe you.
Shogo rested his elbows against his knees, held his chin, and looked to his side in contemplation. Then he looked back at them.
Shuya, you're right. I don't want the others to find out about my plan, and even if you two didn't tell them, I wouldn't want the others to even know that you two knew what it was. So I can't tell you.
After Shuya thought about it, he exchanged glances with Noriko and nodded.
Okay then, I understand. We'll trust you, but something else bugs you?
Shuya shook his head.
It just seems like there's no way out of this situation, so I'm...
perplexed?
Shuya nodded.
Shogo blew out some smoke and rubbed his cigarette into the ground. He ran his hand through his short hair and said,
nothing is perfect. Most things have flaws.
Flaws?
Yeah, a weak spot. I'm going to aim for that weak spot.
Shuya didn't understand. He squinted his eyes.
Shogo continued, I know this game better than you two do.
How's that? Noriko asked.
Don't stare at me with those big eyes, girl. I'm shy.
Noriko gave a blank stare and then smiled a little, asking again,
how?
Finally, Shogo said, do you know what happens to the survivor of this game?
Shuya and Noriko looked at each other and shook their heads.
That was right. There was only one survivor in the program.
After you managed to make it through this absurd game, the Special Defense Forces soldiers shoved you in front of the news cameras so they could have an image of the victor. Smile, you must smile. But they had no idea what happened to the survivor after that.
Shogo looked at Shuya and Noriko.
The winner's forced to transfer to another school, where he or she is ordered not to mention the game and is instructed instead to lead a normal life. That's all.
Shuya felt his chest well up inside, and his face froze. He stared at Shogo and realized that Noriko was holding her breath.
Shogo said, I was a student in third year class C, second district, Kobe, Hyogo Prefecture. He added, I survived the program held in Hyogo Prefecture last year.
27 students remaining.
Chapter 6.
Chapter 27.
Shogo's face softened as he continued. They even gave me a card autographed by the dictator. What an honor that was. It looked like some kid scribbled on it, though I can't remember the details since I tossed it into the recycling. In sharp contrast to Shogo's cheery voice, Shuya took a deep breath. It was true. Any third-year junior high school student could get thrown into the program. But how could you end up in it twice? Of course, if he didn't have to stay back, it would never have happened. But even so, the chances were as slim as winning the lottery. But now it all made sense how Shogo was so familiar with the game. How he noticed the sleeping gas, and of course, the scars all over his body. But if it were true, it was completely outrageous.
That's, Shuya said, that's outrageous.
Shogo shrugged. The game was in July, but because I suffered heavy injuries, I was hospitalized for a long time. It gave me time, though, to study a bunch of things, including stuff about this country, but only while lying in bed. The nurses and staff were really generous and brought me books from the library. I guess the hospital was my school. In any case, that was how I ended up repeating third year all over again. But Shogo looked at them. I have to say, even I didn't expect I'd be in this game again. Of course. Shuya recalled their recent, actually it was already 3 hours ago, conversation. When Shuya asked, did you already kill someone before Kyoichi? Shogo had answered, well, this time, it was my first. Noriko then asked, so those who've been selected? She rephrased the question, perhaps thinking that it sounded too much like winning a sweepstakes prize. So the ones who've been in it already aren't exempt? Shogo grinned. I suppose not, since I'm here. From what we're told, classes are chosen randomly by computer, right? My experience gives me the upper hand, but I guess the computer doesn't exclude me. So here's another case of perverted equality. Shogo cupped his hands around the lighter and lit another cigarette. Now you understand how I detected the gas odor, not to mention, he pointed at the scar above his left brow, this scar. How could they? Noriko said as if she were about to cry. It's too awful.
Come on, Noriko, Shogo broke into a smile. Now I get the chance to save you guys.
Shuya offered his hand to Shogo.
What's this? I can't read your palm.
Shuya smiled and shook his head. Then he said, I'm sorry I suspected you. A handshake. We're sticking together till the very end.
Shogo replied, all right.
He gripped Shuya's hand and shook it.
Noriko smiled in relief.
27 students remaining.
Chapter 28. Kenpatsu Sakamochi, supervisor, was sitting at his faculty desk, rummaging through some scattered documents. To the north and south of him, a Special Defense Forces soldier stood by steel-plated windows equipped with gun ports. The lights inside stayed on because the building let hardly any sunlight in. Five soldiers were staring at a row of desktop computer monitors. Another three soldiers were wearing headphones connected to another machine that wasn't a computer. On the west wall was a large generator powering the lights, computers, and other equipment. The generator's low hum filled the room despite the sound insulation. The other soldiers were taking a break in the room the students had been in. Now then, Yumiko Kusaka died at 8:42 a.m., and, Yukiko Katano, she also died at 42 minutes after the hour. Sakamochi combed his long hair back behind his ears. Ah, I'm so busy. The old black phone on the desk rang, and with his pen still in his hand, Sakamochi distractedly picked up the receiver. Yes, this is Okushima Island School, third year class B, Shiroiwa Junior High School Program Headquarters, Sakamochi answered haphazardly. When all of a sudden he stood up straight, cradling the receiver with both hands. Yes, sir. This is Sakamochi, superintendent. I appreciate all you've recently done for us.
Yes, sir. My second kid just turned 2.
Yes, and the wife's getting bigger by the day with the third.
Oh, no. Well,
We just want to contribute to our nation, joining the fight against its dwindling youth population.
And how can I help you, sir?
Sakamochi listened for a while and then smiled.
Aha. Uh-huh.
My oh my. So you've got your money on Shogo Kawada.
I'm betting on Kazuo Kirayama. I have my money on him.
Well, yes, Shogo Kawada is serious competition. He has experience, which is almost unheard of.
Of course he's still alive.
And how are you, sir?
My, that's impressive.
Excuse me?
The current status.
I believe you have access to it on the monitor, the central government's top secret website.
Oh, you're not good with computers.
Well, sir, then yes. If you could just hold on a moment, sir.
Sakamochi put down his receiver for a moment and then called on a tough-looking soldier sitting in front of the monitors.
Hey, Kato. Is Kawada still with those two?
The soldier named Kato tapped silently on his keyboard and curtly replied.
He is.
The beacons in the students' collars enabled them to plot out each student's location on the map on the monitor. Sakamochi was about to frown at Kato's gruff attitude, but then realized that Kato was only one of the many problem students he'd had ever since he was a junior high school teacher, so it was nothing new. He picked up the receiver.
Sorry to keep you waiting, sir. Let's see. Shogo Kawada is proceeding with two other students. That's Shuya Nanahara and Noriko Nakagawa.
Let's see. Well, they're actually talking about escaping together.
Would you like to hear our recording of their conversations?
Oh, yes, sir.
Hmm?
I'm not sure if he is sincere. I mean, it's hard to say, but I'd say it's a bluff.
Probably.
I mean, it's impossible to escape.
Oh, and yes, hold on one moment, sir.
Documents, documents.
Yes, Shogo Kawada, right? He didn't appear to have been the controversial type at his previous school.
No anti-government actions or statements.
Yes, his father died during the previous game. Looks like his father got drunk and provoked the government, but apparently Kawada himself said, good riddance. He was a bastard anyway.
Hmm?
They probably didn't get along.
Maybe his father insisted on some compensation.
Yes, sir.
If that's so, then he's better off with those two than fighting alone.
Shuya Nanahara is an excellent athlete, so he'll be useful, although Noriko Nakagawa is injured.
Yes, our Tahara shot her.
Yes, of course.
They totally trust Shogo Kawada.
Helping an injured girl. I mean, how brilliant.
His conversation has been most impressive.
Offering a subservient smile, Sakamochi raised his brow in response to his caller. He combed back the hair over his right ear with his free right hand.
What? He replied. That can't be. I mean, that occurred in March. I did receive the report. But if that's true, then right now...
Yes, sir. The central government officials are always prone to exaggeration. Besides, these are junior high school kids.
They would have known we were listening in on them.
Right now, there are no signs that any of these students know this.
Yes, sir.
So...
Yes, 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 sir.
Very well, then.
Oh, no, please, I couldn't possibly accept.
Well, if you must insist, then thank you very much, sir.
Yes, yes. Well, then, goodbye.
Sakamochi took a deep breath and hung up the phone. He held up his pen again and exclaimed,
I'm so busy.
He combed back his hair and began to write frantically on his documents, as if he were clinging to them. 27 students remaining. Chapter 29. When Shinji first found Yutaka Sito, the class clowns seemed on edge from the shock of witnessing the deaths of Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano, but Yutaka calmed down soon enough. In a spot beyond the thick branches, where the warm sunlight poured in, Shinji Mamura was listening closely again. There didn't seem to be anyone else around, only the sound of a little bird chirping. Whoever killed Yumiko and Yukiko didn't seem to have noticed Yutaka and Shinji. Still, he had to be careful. Relax when you have to, but also be on your toes when you have to. The point is, you can make no errors of judgment. His uncle had told him this. He was the one who taught him everything, starting with basketball.
He was the man most responsible for the education of the boy known as the Third Man. His uncle had also taught him computer basics. When his uncle showed him how to access foreign